lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic of Podcast.
D Shavs.
Yes, welcome aboard.
Mate, a bit early today, how good's this? We're it both is. Wired.
Public holiday here in Australia, Labor Day. They still had me working, but.
King's birthday.
Is it?
It's King's birthday, wrong. How dare you do that to our king?
I just do, sorry. King's birthday. That's hilarious. Maybe it's the king and the queen got me all mixed up.
Yeah, we don't know what's what anymore.
No, we don't.
We're not even... Yeah, we like the Poms, but the Aussies are so different.
Hilarious. Episode 119.
Yeah, 119, jeez, baby. I remember doing episode 100. It felt like yesterday. And then we've just done 19 just like that.
True.
Flown by.
Yeah, I think it was in January, wasn't it? Sort of mid-Jan, late-Jan, so... It's all happened. It's all happened.
Bro, as you always say, is like, I was going through the calendar of MotoGP and F1 for the next few weeks, or next couple months, I should say, and it's just like double headers.
Oh, it's jam-packed. Yeah,
Mugello, yeah. Aston's coming up.
Going back to Bruno. Going back to Bruno.
Silverstone for F1.
Yeah, I know. It's huge. It's huge. And then the summer breaks with F1 and MotoGP, as normal now, is they don't happen at the same time. So. Yeah. So I think MotoGP goes on summer break first.
Yeah.
F1's just throughout that whole period, and then vice versa when F1 go on, there are heaps of MotoGP. So it's awesome. We've done our calendar for the year. There's 2 weekends till the rest of the year, till the 10th of December, that there's no racing on a Sunday night.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's the week before we go to Phillip Island, and it's a week after we come back from Malaysia. So yeah.
It actually works really good for us and the listeners as well.
Yeah, it works a bit perfectly. And F1's going all the way till the 10th of December this year, which is so late in the year. So
it's just, yeah, later and later every year.
It is. Yeah, 24 races. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, it's because they're making bank on all these races.
100%.
If it was 2010, it would be a different story.
100%.
They wouldn't be able to afford doing all that. You like that?
I do. So tonight's chatter is going to be a Marquez masterclass.
That's why I'm wearing the Ducati top.
First time in 10 years that a rider has had a Grand Slam perfect weekend.
Yeah. And the last rider to do it?
Mark Sachsenring, his other favorite anti-clockwise left-hand tracks. I mean,
wild.
He's the absolute animal. Now, there was actually a bit of a tidbit on that one that I found out today, that he actually had a perfect weekend in 2022 at Aragon, but he didn't go out and warm up. Didn't top the timesheet. So yeah, he every session. But man,
take away his titles, useless.
But those anti-clockwise tracks, it's just him, isn't it? It's just...
Bro, you were talking about like how much faster he is on those left-handers. Even on other corners, he just looked like he could turn in half a meter, like more than everyone else. Just the edge grip he had was just
incredible.
You can never normally like visibly see it, but you could visibly see it.
And Moto2 as well, like Dennis Onchu on those left-handers, he was the same. He was 2 to 3 tenths better than everyone else.
Bro, your boy Alonso Lopez, tires went off a cliff. As soon as I saw that happen, because I knew you at the footy, I was pissing myself laughing. Like, T-Shabs is going to laugh at this.
Yeah, I watched on delay afterwards, and he dropped like Barcelona last year.
That's
the same thing.
That's what I mean. Like yeah. he was chasing the pack, catching the pack, and then like, he just went one lap too long for some reason, and he just dropped.
I know a lot of people beg the fuck out of the tires in all the categories. There's always opinions on tires, but that's exactly how it should be. I love how the fact how they just, if you tear into bits, they drop off a cliff, and that's how it should be.
Well, Matt Burt was saying on the telecast that it's because what doesn't help Alonso is he's heavier.
Yeah, taller, heavier.
And that's like, that sucks, but it's just what you got to work around. Like Rossi did it.
I mean,
he had his own Michelin tires, but Sepsi, so he had his own tires. Talk to anybody, GP rider, they'll tell you that. Don't come at me, fucking Italian, seriously. Just eat the humble pie. He won the titles.
Wow,
he's
on the Marquez bandwagon to 100% now, aren't you?
Nah, I love it all. I try and stay independent.
Nah, we do here at Motorsport Republic. Now, also, we obviously have to take care of some housekeeping.
Go on.
Motor Heaven.
MotorHeaven.com.au. The guys there are doing an amazing job.
It's got a parts finder. It's got this.
It's got a parts finder. Got 8% off Shoei. There's always something going on there. You never pay full price, Tommy. So if you ever want any motorbike gear, neck warmer. Need a neck warmer?
Can I just get one in general? Do I have to ride a bike?
No. You know, even if you're a cyclist or something, you could have it. I might have a chilly neck.
I might take the dust off the Tuono and take it out this weekend.
Yeah, get it going.
A bit wet, I reckon.
Yeah, it is a bit wet. We'll get to you some slicks. Get some slicks from Pirelli.
Brad Binder, Austria style, you reckon?
Yeah. Around Dymo. But yeah, head to motorheaven.com.au. The guys are doing an awesome job. And something big is coming. I can't say what it is.
Oh, tell us. Come on.
Nah, but you already know, mate. But next month, hopefully, it will be there. And then we're doing a big thing. Or they're doing a big thing, I should say. Yep. So we'll
promote that. Stay tuned for that. YouTube, guys, love it. Taking off. We really appreciate it. It's really important to us. So keep liking and subscribing. It's a big, important thing for us. And Patreon, get on board. We just released our month of May review show, which which we're going to do once a month. And we're also going to throw in some extra eps now and then as well. So
yeah, I think we're probably going to try and do two eps a month. Yep. We're going to do like a review show we're talking about and
go back in time.
Yeah,
Look at a certain race, look at a certain sponsor, brand, tire rider, manufacturer, rider, that sort of thing. So,
and if you've got any of the guys that are on Patreon, message us what you might want us to talk about or actually dedicate an ep onto, because we're happy to take suggestions. It's all stuff we like talking about.
100%. Let's start with results. Main race, Mark Marquez first, and just an amazing win, and just dominated. And I think he probably could have won by more. He just, kept it in the straight and narrow. Didn't make any stupid mistakes. His brother Alex second, dream run for them. Bagnaia third, turned it around from the sprint. Pedro Acosta, amazing fourth. Morbidelli fifth. Aldeguer sixth. Juan Mir seventh.
Amazing.
Bezzecchi, he's got to be close, James. He's got to be close. He had a terrible qualifying.
I put him off Fraud Watch. He's off.
He's off.
Yeah, I took him off.
Jeepers! Oh, we didn't make a song and dance for that one.
The biggest fraud was the trophy for Aragon.
We'll get on that. Digia ninth, disappointing from him. And Raul Fernandez had an amazing weekend, by his standards, 10th in the main race. So, well,
Digia is on Fraud Watch.
Digia, well, when he's getting convincingly beaten by Morbidelli. Now, again, we're gonna talk about this 25 bike, because Digia's on this 25 bike. Bagnaia goes from his worst day in his career to a pretty amazing third place, 2 seconds off the lead. I mean, that's the biggest comeback. We've got some points on that. They made a slight change in warm up, mm-hmm. but let's talk about it. I don't understand how you can turn it around so quickly.
So you know what they did?
Front brakes.
Yeah, the front disc.
Yeah, so
a bigger front,
bigger disc. So that's the word on the street. But at the end of the day, it's just got to be his head. It has to be his head.
Well, Bagnaia said, that's not the fix to fix it.
No.
It fixed it that weekend, and he had some more braking stability, and he could feel like he didn't feel like the front was going to tuck, but it's not going to just fix everything. But he did get third, and he was looking a lot more racy and a lot more comfortable and a lot more of a Bagnaia at old.
He was. And the other thing is Pedro Acosta twice put it up the inside of him. He passed him straight back. Like, that's the old Bagnaia that we're used to. But then again, I think he really struggles when he's stuck in traffic.
Bags.
Yeah, it really does. He goes back. He went back in the sprint race, and obviously that.
Oh, bro, that was a diabolical.
I know. And then ran wide and let three riders through, and then just couldn't get any momentum. Mm. And he just really struggles in that pack. Now, great start, gets into third. Yeah, he had some pressure from behind, of course, from Acosta and Binder before he binned it. But he that's got to be a determining factor. Just. And that's his whole career. Great starts, get there, get into clear air, and then manage the pace from there.
Look, even if Bagnaia was feeling this GP25, he wasn't beating Mark Marquez.
No.
So, you can't say he's lost a win out of it, because he hasn't. Maybe an Alex Marquez, yeah.
Mm.
But at least he's found something. We just don't know what it's going to translate to. And, we're still waiting for Bagnaia to come through with this bike, because we're going to go to Mugello now, and we're going to Assen, which is, again, two of his favorite tracks. So it's going to be interesting on what this change has done, if that's going to translate to Mugello. Is that going to translate to Assen? Because Assen isn't a hard braking track. It's fast and flowing, kind of like a Silverstone.
Well, Mugello, to a certain extent, has got that probably the hardest braking point Mugello, of the first year.
Mugello definitely does.
But then again, it's got a lot of flowing, fast corners, a lot of chicane corners.
It's got everything, that track.
It does. It's a beautiful track. But that's going to be the big test. I mean, we've said that whole year. This is in 2 weeks' time. The bikes are going to go out in Mugello. If he does not perform this race, that is you know, not lights out. Gone.
I think he's going to win it.
Yeah.
I've just got this sneaky suspicion that Marquez is going to crack. Marquez doesn't win at Mugello. He's won there, I think, once.
He crashed. I remember him crashing from the lead.
A couple of times
a few years ago. And then, yeah, well, that's going to be... I mean, how exciting is that going to be? I mean, I'm just...
It's going to be... What's the Italians? Are they going to go for Marquez? He's on a Ducati.
They'll probably get 50,000 less fans there this year because there's no...
They want to see two Marquez as
well. Well, the Rossi's gone and then Bagnaia is like, you know, down third, fourth on the... The championships.
I might be giving out tickets. Maybe we'll be doing a Mugello ticket giveaway.
But we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully. I mean, I'm rooting for him. I have to admit.
I want him to do awesome. Like, we don't want to see anyone do bad, but there's always going to be people having results that they don't want. Like, as you always say, someone's going to have to finish 15th, 16th, 17th. Like, but you want to see him up there, and I want him to see him win Mugello. Like, I think it's just, and it would be an awesome spectacle.
An awesome spectacle. And he needs it for his own confidence and... The championship, obviously, is just pretty much gone, I'm going to say.
93 points behind.
93. Is that a telling figure?
Yeah, I know, right? I'm pretty sure it's 93. But after the sprint race where he was, like, nowhere, like, got passed by Rael Fernandez, just absolutely nowhere, and I was putting him on fraud watch. I think I messaged you saying, like, he's on fraud watch. He saved himself. But he walked back into the pits, just looked... Like, Gigi was like, what the fuck? He's walking in, like, what's going on? Remember Domizia? She looked sad. Like, it was just a shit situation. And then you got Marquez and the other. But, like, we've spoken about this. You've got Marquez just killing it. Like, this has to be a massive factor. As in, if Bagnaia was in the same situation and Nea Bastianini was his teammate and he was in a similar situation to him, it would be... He wouldn't be down in the dumps like he is now. He'd be like, okay, the GP25 needs work.
Yeah.
We need to work. But the problem is Marc Marquez is the only one making this work. Digia definitely isn't. And Bagnaia isn't. He's just made this one improvement, which may be improvement, may not be improvement. So, like, it's just going to... Because Marc is doing so well on it, it must be just absolutely affecting him mentally.
Mm. Well, at the end of the day, the Ducati as a corporation is leading the championship convincingly.
Mm.
And I've said this time and time again, are they really going to go, oh my God, we've got to change the whole bike just to get bags better up there when they're thinking to themselves, well, we've got Mark, he's going to win the championship. And then we've got his brother who's behind him. Do we really have to spend the cash and the resources to do anything to this bike when it doesn't really matter to him?
Yeah, it's Honda all over again though. They need a bike where everyone can
ride.
Dude,
what's going to happen next year? So next year, we're going to have a 26, GP26, last of these rules. And then they're going to be riders are going to go onto the GP25.
Yeah.
And they're going to go, well, we'll just stay on the 24. We don't want the 24.
Well, that's going to be the telling thing. If the GP26 is a good bike and they're going onto the GP25, like, what's Morbidelli and Alex Marquez and these guys Furman, what are they going
to
do?
Exactly right. And are they going to offer, they're going to have to offer more 26 bikes or who knows what's going to happen?
I mean, how interesting would the championship be if Marc Marquez wasn't racing?
Yeah, true.
How interesting would it be? Like, you just wouldn't... It'd be anyone's game.
It would be. Well, Alex would be obviously leading it, but then Bags would have that, you know... In right now, I mean, obviously this is hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, but right now you think, oh, Bags is just going to run over the top of him.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of the year. Yeah. But now it's, you know, he's going to have to make a massive change, both mentally... the team, again, the team aren't going to be 100% for him because at the end of the day, they don't need to be, as I just touched on. But yeah, jeez, I don't know. I don't know. Third place is good, but you know.
It's not where he wants to
be. Is he going to have to come out every weekend now and go, oh my God, I have to find something. I've got to find something. It's the brakes, or it's the levers, it's the fuel tank. Like
levers.
He's going to have to find something every race now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because every track's so different.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely right. Exactly. I think that's where he has to ride around the problem though. And then that's what Marc Marquez said. Mm. Like if you've changed it three different settings and still doesn't work, then maybe you're the problem. Like what a dig that is. That's such a Marc Marquez mind games thing to do.
Yeah.
Very Valentino Rossi-esque as well.
Very much so.
So it's
2 weeks time. It's super exciting. It's going to be make or break for Bagnaia. That's for sure.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I see him winning it. I don't know. I just see him winning it. I just pulling something out.
Mm.
So Tommy, anyway, I've been looking at getting a new helmet.
Okay, right you are.
A replica helmet.
Okay.
So I'm looking at either like a Marc Marquez, Shoei, Rossi AGV, or controversially like a Nakagami Arai. What do you think?
Well, I think Nakagami Arai might be a bad idea because they'd have to build them strong. You know, repeat hits throughout the whole weekend.
That's right.
Where would you find something like that?
Mate, motoheaven.com.au. They have all the helmet brands that you want. They've got all the racing suits, jackets, big brands, HJC, Shoei, Dainese, Alps. Mate, they have everything. How good's that?
That is so good. And I heard like there's free delivery over $150 as well.
Free delivery over $150. Super, super fast dispatch, which is amazing all around the country. They do an excellent job. You just check out their Google reviews. It's like all 5 stars. It's pretty amazing. They do a great job.
Give the people the website.
Motoheaven.com.au. Check them out. They are the best in the business for all your motorcycle needs. And they've got a parts finder. You can get all the parts you want. Brake discs, chains, sprockets, spark plugs. I know that's all gobbledygook to you, Tom. But that is they are the best in the business. Head down to motoheaven.com.au and they will look after you.
But, you know, like the championship's got 93 points, man, for Marc Marquez. Mm. Like, I was waiting for Mark to make a mistake. And he even said through Aragon, he's like, I started thinking about crashing and not making mistake. That's where he just pulled those fast laps in.
Yeah, keep
himself sharp.
Mm.
I guess that's what they say. It's the only way you can ride these bikes.
How was that? You did a 46.3 on 21 lap old tires. I mean, just incredible. And that the greats do that.
Yeah,
the greats do that. I mean, worn tires, hot track, and just pulls it out. And that he must have had so much up his sleeve that whole race. Must have.
Well, he can't be on the edge, but I don't know.
Aragon, and we've had a lot of messages over the weekend. Such a good track, such an underrated track for motor racing.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that, you know, reverse cork through that long left hander. It's a hard braking. The first corner is awkward. It's an awkward first corner. It's sort of like a 90 degree left.
Yeah.
Hard braking zone. You block past central through there.
Yeah.
But then you can also, like what Bagnaia did with Binder, is with Acosta, you can cut back.
Yeah.
And then so we got it around the outside of the next corner. Really, really good. Really, really good racing.
And they can't just put all the power on around that first corner, because then you have to just dip it right anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a great track. It's got a bit of everything. And it just obviously creates good racing. Like all the MotoGP was a bit of a snooze fest, but
It sort of lacked a little bit up the front to be expected. I mean, it was all going to be managing tires and managing everything else, temperatures and everything. So.
Well, Furman and Franco had a good battle, and I wrote down a bit of a quote from Morbidelli, which I found really interesting as a writer's perspective on this. And he says, you know, obviously they touched at 360 Ks now, whatever it was, something crazy. It's like there's really nothing that can train you for a battle at 360 kilometers now to bikes with 250 horsepower and that weight until the last lap of the race with finished tires. There are a few things that can help you train for that, for sure. The ranch has its benefits in training, but I think in those moments you really got to go by instinct. And this is the big thing for me, he says, and it depends on human being to human being. Like, you have to trust that person that you're racing against.
Yeah.
Isn't that like a crazy thing though? Like, you don't really think about that.
No, and it's a great quote.
Yeah.
Really well articulated and put together. I think that's going to be a battle that's going to go on to the rest of the year, those two.
Yeah.
Obviously on the same bike.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. You've got the young buck probably going for that seat to a certain extent. And then you got Morbidelli. And you know what? Kudos to Morbidelli. He didn't die. He just keep trying, keep
he's
going.
Good. He's
he
good. Is. He's awesome on the brakes.
He's awesome on the greats. He's, you know, 2 years ago, we called him, he's done, you know. Why is he even in MotoGP? We're saying he's gone. Signs for VR. And then obviously this year's uninjured and had a good preparation. And he's doing really well.
Nah, he did really well. It was a really good battle.
On our pre-race show at the start of the year, I think we both said, watch out for Morbidelli this year.
Yeah. Oh no, that was you. I'll give it to you. That was you. VR46 looked like the team that could have really done something, but it's actually Grassini.
Yeah.
Grassini is the ones that have been killing it.
Well, I was nearly there, James. I said Ducati 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, and Acosta just spoiled my party.
Yeah, your boy.
Yeah, which is great, and it's interesting because I think race to race now, there's no clear second fastest bike on the grid. Now, we even said 2 weeks ago, is the KTM the worst bike on the grid? It was probably the second best bike
this weekend. So I don't know what Yamaha was doing. They were probably confused with setup.
Well, they always said the whole time it's not going to be a Yamaha track, which I had no idea about when I did my my predictions. And then Yamaha had like rear chatter. That's what they had the whole weekend. Was
but that's not. That's just something that is not on the Yamaha usually, is it?
I don't know. It's just a track thing. Who knows?
Still a low grip circuit.
Yeah.
Still, that's. I mean, that's Marquez's specialty. Left anti-clockwise, low grip.
Yeah. But going back to KTM.
Yes.
It was super hot conditions, and that's what worked for like a hard front tire for KTM. Obviously, Binder still crashed.
Yes.
That's what worked. So, like, is it still a false dawn for KTM? Because I think it is.
Yes, it is.
It's not they haven't found anything.
Yes, it is. And then the problem is they always come out and say, well, we don't really know why we're fast. That's the worst thing you can possibly say.
Yeah.
Because there's no changes to be made. I know Bastianini trying a different setup on his front fork, something like that. But for me, he was the worst KTM of the lot. So disappointing for Binder and Vinales crashing because it could have been a really good day for him.
How did Vinales crash? Did he lose a front?
He's lost a front end after that long Marquez corner left-hander.
Gotcha.
And they called it a Costa on the commentary.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yeah.
Which was, I'm like, oh no. Like, you know, because I was so gutted on the hard front, which I think the gamble paid off for him. But for me, it was a really good day for KTM, a big turnaround. But, you know, again, the Mugellos, the Assens, these classic tracks, are they going to be able to perform on those?
I just think they're still in a massive rut, and I just think it's a false dawn. But okay, where do you see, talking about KTM...
But Zarco goes podium, and then is like 15th and crashes. Like, it's such a difference.
Yeah, it is.
It's amazing how different from track to track can be. It's not like that in Formula One. Mm. Like, the Aston Martin isn't going to come out next weekend and finish like 4th, 5th, you know?
Well, that's the difference though, is it's still so rider-based to a degree.
Yeah.
It's still real. That shows you.
70-30 versus 30-70. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. The whole Jeremy Burgess line.
Yes.
So, like... You look at KTM, is it a false dawn? Because realistically, the only one that finished and it was fast was Pedro Acosta. Mm. Binder was there. He was quick at the start and he crashed. But going to Brad Binder, like, where do you see his future?
Yeah, he's the tricky one. Because he's got, I mean, they all have talent, but he was the next kid, you know, to star 5 years ago. Like, he was about to boom. And then you got the likes of Acosta coming through and then just overshadowing.
Yeah.
What do you think? Like, where do you see him? Like, since he was on the Moto3, he's just been dressed in orange. Like, he's just been KTM.
And fast.
And fast.
Fast. Like, he had an amazing career early on. But it just seems like they've built this bike around Brad Binder, but Brad Binder just can't pull results. That KTM haven't been able to give him the bike. And, like, Binder's had a couple wins and a few podiums, and it's been awesome, but... I just don't know where I see him in orange and in the future for MotoGP. Like, I really think that he needs to go to a different team.
Well,
show his full potential. Because I don't think we're seeing his full potential. And he just makes silly mistakes. But I think that bike is just a dog. And like, I've said this before, I'd love to see him on a Ducati.
Now, at the end of the day, though, I think... Ducati's got 6 bikes on the grid.
It's not going to happen.
They're going to pick Acosta.
Yeah, for sure.
So for him, I think he's just going to have to stay put. He's their baby. He's going to be their most consistent rider throughout going into the next couple of years. I think he just has to stay put.
But do you think, like, for Brad Binder, is like, the dude's finishing like 10th.
I don't think he is going to have... I don't think he has a choice. I don't think he's performing well enough to go, oh, I want to go there. It's just, I think his only option is to stay.
I can see him going anywhere else but KTM. Like even like a Yamaha. I know it's crazy as it sounds,
but I just don't know. I mean, Toprak looks done. Like, it looks signed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's done. Like, and there's reports coming out everywhere that it's done. So you're gonna have those spots are filled. You know, Rins, what's he doing? Who knows? I mean, a Binder Rins would be a great option for him. Rins gone, Binder in. Yeah, factory Yamaha. Obviously, that's an awesome option, but. I don't know. I just don't see Yamaha would have such a choice of rider. Why would they go for him?
Well, like, who wants to go to KTM as well? If KTM are like offering Binder still some
that's
good
what I'm
money,
saying.
Yeah,
like, he's gotta,
I get what you're saying.
He's
got
to stay because KTM will have no choice. They're going to be like, Costa's going. You know, we've got Vinales and Bastianini.
Bastianini wants out.
Bastianini wants out. Vinales could he's like a firecracker, can just, you know, blow a fuse like this, as we have seen. So the only consistent person they're going to have with them is going to be Brad Binder.
And he's been the only
one. And he has to be there. They have to keep him because they're going to have to test bikes. They're going to have to know, have knowledge of, you know, previous generation bikes to, you know, go forward.
It just doesn't seem like Brad Binder is that rider that take him to the next level. Well, everyone thought he was. And I think that's out of his control as well, obviously, with what's happened with KTM. Mm. But even before KTM turned to shit, like, he's still... You feel like he should have still been there.
Yeah, I mean, it's been... I mean, when did they last win? It's probably been 4 years since they last won a race.
Yeah, 2-3 years at least.
Because I'm trying to think... I think Oliveira won at Barcelona, didn't he? I wonder what year that was. But yeah, it's a long time.
Barcelona? Portimao. Was it Portimao?
No, he just won two, he won twice that year. He won both races.
And he won at Mandalika on a Tech 3 KTM.
Yeah, we'll have to have a look at that. We'll have to, we haven't got Curdy here to fact check us today.
No, he's celebrating King's birthday.
He's a monarch.
I don't know why that's funny.
He's a monarch. He's a great believer in the British monarchy. So, but for me, I mean, I think Binder obviously won, but there was a wet race win in Austria. But for me, it's a long time. They've spent a lot of money, too much money by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
When are they just going to have to go, this is enough? I mean, and we touched on with the boys a few weeks ago with the new their new buyer, that they want to go racing, and racing is a very important thing to them. So hopefully that injects some money into the racing team and they can do better. But I just don't think... I think they've had their chance, haven't they?
They've had a good chance at it. Like, they've been in MotoGP for long enough now where you're like... Not maybe not win a title, but compete for a title. But they haven't even competed yet.
Mm.
This is going
to
be.
Then again, we have to look at the results on the weekend. They could have finished. They realistically could have finished, you know,
fourth, fifth, and sixth. But it doesn't happen. That's why we always say with KTM, they could have.
Hindsight.
They should have. They could have. They should have. But it just never happens.
Yeah. But Acosta had an outstanding performance with the bike that he's got under him. You know.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's track dependent. I mean, we looked at these different style of tracks and how you perform on different style of tracks, like in Silverstone with Bezecchi and all that kind of stuff. And the next few weeks are just going to be where the cream rises to the top, as we say, and where we're going to see who the really is on the second best bike. Because, bro, Bez, I mean, he had a great weekend.
I was about to bring it up.
I mean, if he didn't...
Last to eighth, I think, in both races.
I know. It's incredible. And then, like, the commentator's like, oh, Bez is going to be lucky in the top 10. And then he finishes eighth. I mean, he's... I mean, obviously helped with obviously the two KTMs going down, but for me it was
great. Right, one of the best rides actually that weekend was Bezecchi's both of his races.
So that's a positive for him, and he performed in Silverstone.
Yeah, out of Fraud Watch, that's the biggest thing.
And then Raul Fernandez, top 10 as well on the Aprilia. So there's signs of life there as well. I mean, what could have been if Bez qualified 6th or 7th? He might have been up there with Acosta in that battle, and we could
have definitely had
a different kettle of fish again.
I think hopefully with Aprilia and with Bez, like, they've found something, because everyone said Silverstone's like a false dawn for them as well. Like, don't trust that track, a bit like Phillip Island.
Yes.
But in Aragon, where it's not really suited for them, hot conditions, for him to race through the field in both races like that, it was a great effort to get eight. So that didn't crash either. Like, that's a big thing. The dude always runs off or he crashes. That's why he's on Fraud Watch. But it's good to see that he actually went through the field, passed everyone, and realistically probably did the best that he could do.
Oh, I think it's in this modern day MotoGP, I think going from 20th to 8th is the best you can do. These bikes are so fast now, their bikes are so big. So much problem with the front tire heating up. So, and then the other result for the weekend was Mir. I mean, he obviously got really unlucky in the sprint race.
They don't like each other, Jack. No, and Mir. They don't like each other at all.
I actually didn't see any video of the incident.
He went way very, too hot.
Very Jack. World Superbikes didn't have the replay.
Johnny Ray. Right away.
he did, yeah. But for me, great result, 7th.
Honda.
And obviously, Zarco struggling, which just doesn't make sense again. Like, how much Zarco struggled and Juan Mir's up there. So, that's good signs for him.
Might not be a Zarco track, though.
Yeah, true.
Spanish, true. The race, probably, he's probably done a million laps around there, Mir.
Yeah. So, good point. Good point.
It's probably just a... Like, you know, everyone doesn't have their track.
Mm.
So, it makes sense. But it's good for Honda and Mir to be up there in 7th. Like, that's great to see. Right. And again, and it's working. And you look... they followed Mir into his pit garage. two Japanese guys. Mm. Rest of them are Euros. Mm. Listening to our 10-point plan. Japanese, I'm telling you, can't trust them.
You see that? Yeah.
You can only have a couple in their teams. Bro.
Too conservative.
Pull up. Pull up. Nah, don't listen to him.
Low terrain. Low terrain.
Pull up. Pull up.
That's OG listeners will know.
Yeah. But like, remember, and we've spoken about this a couple of times, when more kids would go through the paddock, the MotoGP paddock, and you would be walking through, and there'd be Japanese everywhere, smoking darts back in the day, squatting, smoking darts, talking data.
Yeah.
It's just, you don't see many Japanese people working there now. It's just all Italians and Spanish, but they're the only ones that seem like they can, they've moved with the times, developed the bike. You know, Ducati's got their own 3D printer, making shit on the fly and just throwing on the bike and launching it. Like, it works. It's what you've got to do. You've got to be a bit more cowboy about it.
Yeah.
The Japanese, I get it, they're so conservative, but it's just not working. And then, and now look at Yamaha and Honda. They're both all European dominant.
Mm. What's going on with this V4 with Yamaha? They teased it, then they said they're not testing it. I mean, testing's probably happening right now.
Yeah, they're testing it.
But then they're saying there's only inline fours that they're going to be testing. So it's very confusing.
Well, it depends who's testing it.
Well, Augusto Fernandez came out and said, no, it's going to be both inline fours. We're not testing a V4 this weekend. Then all the press said, we're testing a V4. So it's just, again, that's interesting. Like, that was like, at the start of the year, that was what everyone was talking about. And then I think Yamaha shocked us how well they have been going with not changing a huge amount on the bike. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes. But for me, like, you know, Quartararo has gone from like 14th, 15th consistently, then having a really good race, and then, but now qualifying first. Mm. I mean, it's a major difference.
But it's everything qualifying now.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But he's just wrestling, we touched on this, wrestling the bike around, and but obviously they're making some good changes. Jack's pretty...
Mate, he's been doing good.
He's a pass mark. Yeah.
They're just a work in progress. Like, that's just all Yamaha is a work in progress, and I reckon Honda and them with the new regs coming up is going to be a massive, massive difference. But talking about Yamaha, Toprak, we've touched on it just before. It looks like it's all but done. Gino Borsoi was speaking to Jack during the race weekend and said, you know, nothing signs, but we've had talks. And it just makes me think with these Yamaha riders contracts. So you've got Jack, Miguel, Quartararo and Alex Rins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know how they say, okay, you got a 2-year contract, and just say Miguel Oliveira and Alex Rins, they've both got a contract for next year. Talking about all these clauses now, do you think there's a clause in either of those contracts where it's like, if you're not performing, then we have the right to then turf you?
Well, I think when you're going to be that desperate, as probably Jack would be for another contract, I think that would be something that would be in there.
Because I don't see Jack getting booted, because he's the only other rider that's making Yamaha work.
You've been talking about this for a few weeks now. I mean, all the press is saying Oliveira is staying. You're the only person that I know who's saying that Jack's staying. You're the only person.
I know.
And if it could be a crystal ball moment, James is first.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for that.
I don't see him going. I think he's got... Wait, well, Paolo Campagnoli, again, doesn't mean anything.
Big boss, yeah.
Says he wants him there. Again, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. There is,
but Oliveira has done nothing.
But for me...
Rins has done nothing.
For me, who's going to be on the factory bikes next year? Because Rins is not going to be on the factory bike. I'm telling you. He cannot be on that factory bike next year. He's done nothing. He cannot be. So who is going to be? You're not putting Jack on the factory bike. You're not putting Oliveira on the factory bike. You're definitely not putting Toprak on the factory bike.
Well... Like, okay.
I'm waiting for a shock signing for that second seat. I'm telling you.
Well, I don't think Oliveira and Rins are up for it. And I'm not just saying Jack because he's Australian, but he's the only other rider on Yamaha actually pulling performances.
Is Yamaha talking to Jorge Martin?
I doubt it. I don't know. Bro, who knows?
Mm.
This is why we talk on this podcast. Maybe. I haven't thought of it.
I haven't even thought of that either until now. I'm like, that would be...
But like...
What a get, you know?
For sure. But there's also technically... The only person that it could move on is Jack. But I'm just wondering with these... There's so many clauses now.
I don't worry
this,
about contracts anymore.
But I know, that's what I mean.
Just play them out.
Exactly, that's what I mean. There's all these performance clauses and shit in there that no one knows about. And like they can just turf them anyway.
So if Jack's on $1 million a year, which he probably... No, I don't think he would be. But $1 million a year over 2 years. at the end of the year, they can say, Jack, we're going to pay your contract out for next year. Here's $1 million. See you later.
Yeah.
That can easily be done.
Because the thing is, but Jack's not even contracted for next year.
Mm. Yeah, exactly right. Which Oliveira is.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like the option. Yeah. But why would you get rid of Jack when he's the only other person that can ride your bike?
Mm.
Oliveira can't and Rins can't.
Oliveira's got... Oh, he's got...
Yamaha's got dead weight at the moment.
Oliveira has like nude photos of Yamanaki Yamaha or something because he... And then no injury.
Was he injured? He missed a couple races start of the year.
Missed a couple of races.
Argentina but and Coda.
We've been finding excuses for this kid for 2 years now.
Yeah.
And he hasn't shown anything. Like Raul Fernandez, for instance, is arguably one of the slowest guys on the grid. And he's showing something this weekend. But for me, Rins and Oliveira have just not shown anything. There might be a couple of Q2 appearances from Rins, but then just goes backwards.
This is the conversation, not even, bro. This is the conversation that no one seems to be having or want to have. That there's dead weight at Yamaha.
Yeah.
There is. And it's Oliveira and it's Alex Rins. And I love Alex Rins. Always been a massive fan of him. But it's just not working. Oliveira's not working. And they've got two seats right there. Mm. Two gun riders could be on that bike. Whether it be a Toprak and, you know, I don't know.
Dude, for me, Toprak for me and for big boy Paolo Cabanotti, it's a marketing ploy at the end of the day. To get here, the biggest name in Superbikes over into that team for maybe not a lot of money, put him in that team and he could perform. But for me, it's number one. It's a marketing ploy from Paolo. Like, it's such a big risk, you know. He can come over like... You look at Huertas and Moto2. Yes, he's improving slightly, but he's still 15th to 20th finishing every weekend.
Standard Moto2, though. But MotoGP, like, you'd be fast from the get-go.
You have to be.
On a bike that's, we don't know how good it is. Like, Quartararo is struggling to make it work, but making it work.
And the difference between a superbike and a MotoGP bike, it's further away now than it ever has been.
Yeah.
So, for me, it's such a big risk.
Different tyres.
But it's so, like, for me, it's such a big risk, but it's worth it because it's Toprak. Raz Gagliocklu.
I think that team needs Quartararo, it needs a Toprak, it needs a Jack, and it needs one other gun rider.
Mm. And it could be a Binder.
Yeah.
Could be a Jorge Martin.
It can't be an
Alex
Rins.
Could be a Bastianini.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I...
It's funny, Bastianini was explaining like what he needs for the bike to go faster, and he's just naming everything that is on the Ducati. He's an interview after that. He's like, oh, I just need, you know, more, you know, spin out of the corner, more, you
like
know,
front
more
end stability, or
yeah. And then it was just like tick, 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 Ducati GP24, you know. So,
You got an interesting take. I don't know if it's too early to say on Neil Hodgson and Jorge Martin.
Yeah, so Neil Hodgson came out and said, and half defending Martin about this new contract that he's trying to get out of. So,
contract fraud, new fraud watch, fraud by the way. Watch. Contract fraud.
So his point of view is what happened was Ducati have gone, we're going to sign Marquez. So at the end of the day, Martin had to find somewhere to go. He signed with Aprilia, 2-year deal, obviously first year and then performance based for the second year by the sounds of it. His point of view is Martin's actually gone to Aprilia and said, look, we had an agreement in the contract that by Le Mans, well, I'm going to decide if I'm performing well and then year two is going to happen. Martin's actually asked for an extension of that time. And Aprilia has apparently gone, no, we need to know now if you're riding this bike next year because we either have to find another rider or we continue with you. And he goes, well, no, I can't give you that. I don't want to give you that. So I'll exercise my right to exit the contract from this year. And Neil Hodgson saying, well, like, yes, we're all jumping on with Martin and going, you know, how disrespectful it is, how crazy it is. But that point of view, it's thinking, well, you know, he's looking out for his best. He's in the prime of his career as an ex-world champion. So it's an interesting take. And for me, by the sounds of it, yes, he still would like to ride that Aprilia next year, but he needs more time to see if the bike's going to be worth riding. Because he can go and slip into a Yamaha. You know, he could slip into a Honda. So it's an interesting take and I didn't think of it like that.
I guess he did bring that up in his weird cryptic message.
He hasn't been... that's the problem with it. He hasn't been clear.
Yeah, nothing's been clear
So everyone, as soon as... You're not making sense. Get out of here. That's how everyone's feeling.
Yeah.
You know, that's... And it's
it's really well put, what you said, what Neil Hodgson said. It's really well put. And I understand. Like, I 100% get where he's coming from and... It's just what hurts him is it's just he hasn't had any time on the bike.
Yeah.
So like you and see it's that.
His, it has been his fault.
Of course.
Yeah.
So it's just a really awkward situation that no one's really navigated through, right or wrong, on whoever it is. I don't know how to answer it though. Like yeah. I don't. It's
an interesting take.
It's a really interesting take.
And a lot of people were talking, you know, been talking in the media about this, and every comment is just so negative towards Martin.
And I feel for him for that. Yeah. I do feel for him for that. And like, you know, we try and report on it and give our feelings on it. And I still don't think it's probably the right thing to do. But I understand that you want an extension and you want to know where that bike is. But surely, speaking to Aleix Espargaró, you know where this bike's going. Like, you surely you know, like, they know so much more than us. Like, he sees the data. Like, surely you can see the data and be like, okay, this is what I can do. Like, this is my predicted lap times. Like, this is what I should be able to do. And then I think there's at a point where you just have to kind of like put your balls on the line, back yourself in. Because like Valentino knew after three laps on that Ducati that wasn't worth it. That's what he said. Three laps in. He's like, this isn't it. I made a mistake. He did try to get out of his contract after the first year and they held him to his contract, but he stayed in it and he just did it. And he said after those 2 years, I just got older. It was a waste.
Yeah.
But this is a different situation as well. The Aprilia is not a bad bike. And I think I get it, but like you're not going to a Ducati. You're going to a Honda. Everyone's clapping at getting seventh.
Yeah.
So like I think you still got to look at the options that you're going to. And it's still a Honda that's struggling and a Yamaha that's still struggling. Like, okay, they're doing better and we're all praising them, but they're not as good as an Aprilia. And he's one of the fastest riders in the world. He can make that Aprilia work. I think you just kind of have to back yourself in.
Yeah, I know. That's the same thing as me. I'm thinking to myself, look, next year's the last year of these current rules. Just back yourself in. Commit to it. I'm going to do it. I'm
going to race fast.
Next year. And see what happens. But for me, he's now going to think, oh, should I go to Yamaha? Should I go to Honda?
He got Aleix Espargaró in his ear at Honda. I still think he's going to be faster on that Aprilia than he is on a Honda. Yeah, the Honda's doing awesome. We love Honda. Make Honda great again. But they're still like only cracking in top 10s, top 7s.
Yeah.
Where I think Oe Martin can, like, where's he going to go? Honda Aprilia, he's not going to KTM. He's not going to Ducati. Like, He's just going to go backwards if he leaves. Like, back yourself in, bro. You're fast.
And reevaluate things for 27 because that's, you know.
Stop talking to Aleix.
Yeah. That should be the new 10-point plan.
Yeah. Maybe we'll make him a hat. Maybe we'll make him a hat.
No, stop we'll talking. Make a Jorge Martin 10-point plan, I think, is the next thing.
We're going to build the wall between Aprilia and Honda.
Seriously. Yeah, for me, it's a messy situation for all. And, most Republican, we feel for Aprilia 100%, like we do. Because they're trying their heart out and obviously they had a really good result with Silverstone and Bez coming through the field, but let's see. Hopefully, next few weekends they can shine. Is there a chance that Martin will be on the Aprilia next year?
Yeah, there's always a chance. Yeah, there's always a chance.
That definitely hasn't been cut off. And this makes more sense looking at Neil's point of view because thinking, okay, well, there's been a bit of biff from both sides, and that's why, you know, Martin's still at the Aprilia ride day. You know, that's why Martin's still an Aprilia rider. They're not gone. You're gone. Finish now. So there's still a chance that he'll be on that.
It's definitely still a chance. You can't rule that out. But like, you just got to look at where his options are. It's Honda or Yamaha, and they're both not even really cracking top sixes.
Yeah.
Where the Aprilia has won a race, and Marco Bezzecchi's had an amazing, amazing round in Aragon, starting from last. Like, I just think his performance will be better on an Aprilia than it is. The ceiling's higher on an Aprilia than it is on a Honda or a Yamaha. I think a dude just needs to back himself in. He's so fast. He's arguably the fastest rider over one lap ever.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah. He's a world champion.
Like, well, for me as well, I think you got to look at, I know we always talk about this, but the new rules, I think the big companies are gonna nail these new rules. They got more resources. Aprilia is probably the smallest company on the grid, aren't they? So is that determining his decision? Did he jump into the Aprilia contract too soon? Was it a bit of buyer's regret? We'll see, it'll all come out. So, now a question for you. And
oh, I like these.
I was a little bit confused. Why aren't they running a second Honda?
What's going on?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, Marini's out. You've had all week to figure it out. You know, you could send a Moto, you could put a Moto 2 rider in there. You could do anything.
Alesha Spargo
could run that race. Like, why isn't it a second on? I just can't believe it. It's like, for me, Formula One, someone gets injured, like Lance Stroll.
Yeah.
First thing, who's replacing him? We need two cars on the grid.
Yeah.
Of course we need two cars. It's more advertising. It's better for testing the bike, everything. But they haven't done it.
I think, and I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think it's just you got to put a wild card in there, a replacement. And I think you only get a few for the year. But then actually in saying that, Savadori has just replaced Jorge Martin the whole
time. Yeah.
So maybe that doesn't make sense. Because I remember them talking about that in commentary, like they've only got an allocated amount, but then they've just had Savadori replace Martin the whole year.
Yeah.
He's been a full-time rider, so...
Just don't understand.
Like, if they can put someone in, it doesn't make sense why they just wouldn't throw in Nakagami, who's actually done half right there before he got spooked.
Man, he performed awesome in Le Mans. He finished seventh in the end. We were talking about that last week. Nakagami scored more points at Bagnaia over the last 2 weekends. But yeah, I just don't get it. I don't get it.
There has to be an answer.
Biggest two-wheel motorsport in the world, and you can't put in a rider to race your second factory Honda bike, which is the biggest brand, one of the biggest brands in the world, you know?
And you got two fast test riders.
You got Castrol, major sponsor. Like, they want a second bike on the grid.
Yeah, I don't know. There has to be a reasoning for it. There has got to be a reasoning for it.
But yeah, you debunked that whole Salvadori because he's been there the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you go, oh, you only allowed a certain amount of different wild cards, well, you know, surely there's going to be exemptions there. Like, wouldn't Dorna want more bikes on the grid? Like, why would they want less bikes?
Mate, they're freaking out about the freight charges, apparently.
Oh, yeah, DHL one plane. I mean, seriously. One plane.
That is ridiculous.
Versus two.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we're talking about them. There's whispers in the grid that Moto 2, Moto 3 may not come to every event because it's not actually about that. It's about they want to actually reduce the size of Moto 2 and Moto 3 so they can fit all the freight on one plane. I'm like, oh, seriously, it's just the dumbest thing ever. Right. More bikes on the grid's better.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. You can afford to have a few more teams.
Yeah.
Seriously. It's more merch being sold, more people you can cheer for.
Yeah, exactly.
Bro, I know I bring it up every week, but it annoys me. Chantra. He was a second off everyone else in qualifying.
I don't want to talk about him, bro.
A second off Savadori, a test rider.
I don't want to talk about him.
Like,
he's not worth it.
What are we doing?
I'm not wasting my breath.
But this doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah,
you can't be a second off everyone else in qualifying.
The thing is, touching on Nakagami, we thought Nakagami was bad.
All right, he at least got 12th, 10th.
Yeah.
Chantra is another level. Like, it just... He can't be on that bike.
On a race-winning bike. He's on a race-winning bike.
He's on a full factory Honda that's just not working.
Yeah, it's bad.
Like, okay, we don't expect him to be top 10s, but you can't be a second off a test rider. He's last every race.
Yeah, it's a deplorable effort. And
deplorable.
It's going to be... There's got to be time... You know, it's not motorsport.
What do you think Ceccanello's thinking and Honda?
I don't know.
And
I think Ceccanello gets the paycheck every week, so I don't think he... I think that's the only reason behind it.
There's no development out of him. There can't be development. If you're a second off, second last.
I wonder what they're paying for that sponsorship.
Must be huge, man.
Yeah.
They go hard.
You got to look at LCR as like a single bike team now.
Bro, you do. Like, Chantra doesn't get anything. But like, just being a second off, second last... on a test rider that wasn't supposed to race this year. Lorenzo Savadori, we love him, but he should be a second off.
And
that's fair enough.
He's got no right. You know, like, and I think, I wonder if Michele Pirro's racing in Mugello.
Oh, yeah.
That could be a real good battle. If he gets beaten by Pirro.
Bro, Pirro fucking does a lot of laps around Mugello. I think he's done the most ever. He's normally top three, top four in FP1.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A little tidbit for everyone right there.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So I it just annoys me, man.
Don't know.
It annoys me. Like, this can't be. He can't keep getting away with this.
Now, I've had a mental blank. Our boy, bloody Moto 2. He's gonna
Manu
Gonzalez. Far out. Sorry, Manu. He's going to be testing the Aprilia today, right now, while we're speaking. Is that Aprilia?
Yeah.
is that Aprilia thinking, well, we're gonna have to find a rider for next year?
Testing the waters, 100%.
Yeah. That's exciting for him. I think he deserves it. He's had a... Again, we always talk about this in Moto2, you have to have a few years to get yourself going.
Yeah.
And for him, he has shown that he is probably the fastest rider this year.
Yeah. He's the fastest rider in Moto2. And consistent.
Consistently. Obviously, he really struggled in qualifying. Both the intact GPs did struggle in qualifying because they were 14th and 18th, I think. And kudos to Senna coming through and finishing fourth. But yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be really good to see. And it's a test. It's going to be a test to see how quick he is on a MotoGP bike and how he can adapt. Like, yeah. So you got to bring your A game, which is exciting. Must be scary, though.
Oh, yeah, so scary. And I think I saw Senna comment on his post today. He's like, man, make sure you get those braking markers right.
Change your braking markers. Good on him. Shows they've got a good relationship.
Yeah, it does. They have a really good relationship.
The team
awesome.
Seems pretty good.
Team seems great. Team seems like good harmony. And like it looks like it's like a factory outfit, you know,
they look
professional.
Good. They look good.
Like all like when we walked into their pits, like it's everything's like, you know, in its place. So there wasn't people running around trying to find, you know, fairings and brake pads and shit. It was just all very calm and collective.
It was calm. One other thing for you that had two other things, but the first one I'll say, how crazy is it now you go to somewhere like Aragon and you don't even see a 46 anywhere?
Yeah.
You know, remember those days where like you just see yellow hats everywhere? Yep. Like it's most tracks now. It's just amazing how everyone, like there's still 46s, don't get me wrong, but like it's just, and we've spoken about it slightly, it's not like everyone's jumped on the VR46 bandwagon either, like the team.
Well, Marquez has just gone from strength to strength with popularity because he's shown he's been the underdog for so many years and now he's come back and winning everything. And people love that.
Every track is now dominated by Marquez fans.
Yeah, it's amazing. And even on like the socials, man, like if this was 3 years ago and we're talking about Marquez Rossi, 80% of the comments would be Rossi people going, oh, this and that. Now it's the opposite. It's 80-20, the opposite way. Like it's amazing. Like we get, and you know, when we started this podcast, we copped a lot of shit for both sides. But yeah, majority of the time, like the Rossi fans are just dwindling, you know, lower numbers. So it's a different time for MotoGP, that's for sure.
It's so interesting how they just haven't adopted the VR46 team, though. You'd think they would.
It's weird. Yeah. It, bro, it just shows you Rossi's personality, which is what...
That's what it was.
All it was is his personality and just brought people to the sport. I mean, it's he was the most incredible person for that. And we wouldn't be here today in popularity if it wasn't for him, 100%.
Definitely. Imagine him now. It's only going strength to strength.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be a super...
But just a young Italian, fucking good-looking young lad coming through would be that... Just needs to be that. But you can't choose your personality either.
It will never happen again, though. Yeah. Like, what Rossi was doing was... Remember, he had a banter with Max Biaggi. Rossi was on the 250s. Max was on the 500. There's rumors that Max was dating Naomi Campbell. So he gets a sex doll, says it's Naomi Campbell, puts on his bike after winning a race. Crazy. So imagine someone doing that now. Like, no wonder you love him.
Yeah,
doing shit like that. Pretending to go onto the Portaloo. Just cool shit.
Yeah, and it went... And he wasn't the first to do those crazy... But he went, like... He just took it to the next level, didn't
he? Yeah, and so. It was just super fan interactive and, you know, pandered to the fans. That's what you want.
Yeah.
No wonder everyone loves him.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky to live in an era where we saw these two great riders, you know? And then they had the biggest... Like, the most amount... Like, they loved each other at the start and then hate each other by the end. I mean, it's... this is what we love it. This is why we watch it. You know, that's why we tune in on a Sunday night. Is this these the personalities, the battles, the politics, everything that goes with it?
And you know, Marquez just wants to beat his record.
He
wants 10. I think he's
gonna. Well, footage of
he's gonna equal it.
Year. They're testing Le Mans. They're not testing at Le Mans, but they're testing somewhere. And then there's footage of Rossi watching the race on a little monitor.
Cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's in his overalls, about to jump in the car, and he's watching the race on his phone, I think. So.
Well, Quartararo did the same thing. He was just about to go out for qualifying, and he was watching F1 or whatever it was.
Monaco,
I was going to say another thing that I don't know why this dawned on me, but like you look at MotoGP and you think every week they break the track record.
By miles.
How are they going faster?
By miles they're breaking it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I remember when I was a kid, I would be like, and Rossi was on that Honda or on a Yamaha or whatever, or Casey, like, how are they going to go faster than this? And they just still seem to go faster.
It's amazing. It was 0.4 faster than anything else, I think. Aragon's probably one of those tracks that obviously the year they went before, they didn't they didn't break any lap records because the track was so slow. They've resurfaced the track. The bikes are so much faster. But yeah, I mean, it's a major, massive, massive difference. Like,
they just, I don't, like, where does it end?
And
where does it end?
You looked at Moto2. Moto2 was 4 seconds a lap slower, and I actually went through the records of previous years, like 10 years ago or 07. They've always been about 4 seconds difference.
Mm.
But obviously, everything's just gotten so much quicker. So yeah. Moto2 is lapping the same times as what MotoGP was 15 years ago.
It's wild.
So,
and tyres help, like, you know, new tyres obviously help.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Technology.
Well, yeah, true, but this, I suppose.
Where does it end? That's all I'm asking is, where does this end?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, they're going to bring it down to 800s.
Kudos to, the Triumph, that engine, you know, like, it's amazing how fast those Moto2 bikes are going. It's incredible.
Yeah, they've been.
Minute 50s around there they were doing. Minute 50s. Crazy.
It is crazy. It's a big track. You don't realize how long it is.
I know.
It's 5Ks.
Incredible.
5+Ks.
Yeah. It's a kilometer straight, isn't it? So, the back straight.
That's all I got from MotoGP, big dog.
All right, well, we touched on a little bit of Moto2, I suppose. But yeah, my boy finally gets it going, eh?
What a closest Moto2 victory ever.
I'm telling you, bro, and crystal ball moment from T-Shab 2 years ago. Dennis on Chew on a bigger bike. On a bigger bike, he's finally showing it.
Bro, you know before this race, we're talking how much pressure he was under because he wasn't performing. And then bang, goes out and wins.
And awesome. You know, he lost the lead in that last lap. And then just did that wider line in that last corner. And that was just awesome. Around the outside as well. Like, he went around the outside and then the outside again. Normally, you'd cut into the inside.
Well, he said, he's like, what's the worst that's going to happen? I'm going to finish second.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so as long as your body gets over. Is it your body or the bike has to get over the line?
Oh, I don't know. I keep hearing different things about that. But awesome. It was so good to see.
Yeah. And Diego Moreira, kudos to him. And they both never won before. Yeah, so they're both going for it.
Fuck, it was close.
So Dennis on Chu first. Diego Moreira second. Barry Boltas third. Senna Aegis, great ride. Up 10 positions. Philip Salich fifth. Aaron Canet sixth. Joe Roberts seventh. Marco Ramirez eighth. Manu Gonzalez, ninth. I think he used too much tyre coming through the field by the looks of things. And Alonso Lopez in a lonely 10th after his tyres went kaboom.
Standard
He actually
Alonso.
Sort of, he went back really fast and then sort of, I think, gathered it up again. But he,
as soon as I saw it, I thought of you. I was like, that's so funny.
It's just interesting here, James. You've got to look at nationalities. Now, we always talk about Spain being the dominant nationality. Also, in a Spanish track, they've done lots of laps. But Turkish, Brazilian, Belgium, Australian, Czech Republic.
Wow.
Is the top five. Yeah, no Spanish.
And Moto2 is really throwing it up.
Then you got Aaron Canet, Spanish, Joe Roberts, US, and then Spain.
Italian.
Yeah.
No Italians is a bit scary.
Italian, Tony Arbolito in 17th. Well, who was it? What's he going to blame this week, Tony Arbolito? Far out, seriously. But yeah, it's amazing. Like, yes, we talk about their home track having a home ground advantage, but no Spanish in the top five.
That's wild. That is a crazy thing.
So,
crazy thing.
Spain.
That's what it's normally like, isn't it? Danny Holgado.
What are you thinking? What's he thinking? What's he doing?
Taking out our boy David.
I saw it.
He was going in way too hard.
Very hot. Aaron Canet, Jerez 2015-esque.
This went in way too hot.
Way too hot.
Pinballed poor old David Alonso.
Now, how is our little boy, David?
No idea.
Because apparently he got taken to the medical center.
Yeah.
And I think he's broken a couple of fingers or something by the looks of things. But hopefully, still had a smile on his face.
That was a shame, though. He would have been good for that race.
I know.
I was annoyed by that.
Super annoyed.
Both those riders would have been good for that race.
I know. And so disappointing. Like, Aspar, you know, home race to a certain extent, you know, home country, but you know what the Spanish are like, but there's about four different regions of Spain. They all don't want to actually be Spanish.
Nah,
it's amazing.
So European.
He's Valencian. They're actually Valencian, not Spanish.
Yeah, it's so European. It's all get along, seriously.
I know. But yeah, it was a great race. And some different names up there. Barry Boltas.
Yeah.
You know, it's
he's come a long way.
But it shows that this track is, you know, it can throw up a different result when it's that slightly, you know, heat and grips and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. Qualifying is just so important in Moto2. Like, Emmanuel Gonzalez is probably one of the fastest riders out there. But if you're starting, you know, an 18th or whatever it is,
it's impossible.
You're just going to destroy tyre trying to get up there. You know, it's different in Moto3.
But kudos to Senna.
Yeah.
Because he had you know, he was 14th he started and got up to 4th and looked really fast. Again, it could have been a different story if he was up there.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, so. Exactly. So he's just coming a long way, Senna. He's having an amazing little period.
And happy birthday, he turns 20 today.
Wow.
So
no longer a teenager.
I know. It's a big 20 going on 35.
Yeah, I know. Like mental maturity.
With like 15 years, like hard life.
Yeah.
just life experience.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm just where's the Italian talent coming through? There's no one. What's this VR46 Riders Academy doing?
Don't know, man. Don't know. It's all about, bro, I'm telling you.
Moto3, there's no really anyone. It's all
about the South Americans at the moment. Diego Moreira, David Alonso. This is like, and even like the Turks.
Yeah.
Like you've got, you know, you've got Raz Goglioglu. And I mean, Dennis Onchu. I mean, you got, you know, it's just.
You got Aussies coming through.
Aussies coming through. It's a, yeah, it's a good time.
Plenty of Spanish, but. Yeah. Like, no, it's no Italians. Like I think the only other Italian in the lower classes is you got like Tony Arbolino and Celestino Vietti, but they're not doing much.
Mm.
And then you got like Luca Lanetta, Valentin Perrone, I think his name is, in Moto3, but I could be wrong.
Well, Luca Lanetta actually looked good. I think he was 5th and then just magically went down to 10th or 11th and then just fell away from there.
But there's no like stars coming through at the moment. No. There's no little David Alonso's or Rueda's.
No, it's, yeah, no, you're right. 100%.
That's a bit scary.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. And we went through this like, you know, 10 years ago, we call them the Italian Bees. Because you had Bagnaia, Bezzecchi, Baldassare.
Big influx.
Huge. And they were dominating the lower classes. And then,
but before that, there was no Italians either. It was just correct. Rossi holding everyone up. And it was all Spanish. Yeah. Those 2010, like Casey was just going up against a Spanish Armada.
What's going on? This doesn't make sense. There'd be lots of local racing, a lot of people riding too.
You got the bikes. Academy?
Yeah.
Just in the Grand Prix classes. Yeah, there's something going on.
They've got a pretty good representation in MotoGP, but just nothing really. I mean, Arbolino was the next best thing, but yeah, he's just showing nothing. He might be lucky and score a MotoGP ride somewhere.
Who?
Arbolino.
Maybe. Hey, Curdy. Curdy's finally coming in.
He might get lucky and just get signed, you know, because we always talk about politics in the back of the pack, the paddock. That, you know, that he's shown talent over the years. He's done nothing for 2 years, but he might just have a really good couple of races at the end of the year. Spot opens and he's in. That could happen.
Yeah. I can see that happening 100%.
And he's a superstar. Like you meet, when you meet him and you talk to him, you're like, this guy's
nice guy. Really MotoGP, nice guy.
You know, he's MotoGP material, that's for sure.
Definitely. But you need to win races. It's going to be proven. And then no one's doing that for the Italians at the moment.
No,
which
no
is
one.
Just a weird thing to say.
Yeah, you're right.
Interesting.
Moto 3. Talk amongst yourselves while I get the results up.
Curdy's just doing his thing. Thanks for coming, Curdy. You're celebrating King's birthday. All good. Say good day. Poor bastard.
All right. So, Moto 3. We have David Munoz first.
Yeah.
Maximo Quiles second, Alvaro Carpe third, David Almansa fourth, Luca Lanetta fifth.
There you go.
Angel Piquera sixth, Joel Kelso seventh, Rueda eighth, Yamanaka ninth, and then our boy Cormac Buchanan.
Hey, 10th. Shout out.
Didn't even give him, he messaged us last time, didn't even give him a well done, which is a bit rough.
Yeah, well, I was seeing stars.
We're playing hard to bet. Well done, Cormac. Congratulations, mate.
Great effort. Top 10, I believe.
Dude, 1.7 seconds off winning.
Bro, he was charging through.
Yeah, it's awesome.
He's probably just got stuck at the end of the pack, but if it's your first time kind of racing at the front of the pack in Moto3, like, you'd be happy to be there as well.
Well, he was in the front pack.
Yeah, he was.
So, good on him. Congratulations.
He actually bridged the gap, I think. Which is pretty impressive.
That's awesome. Yeah, he's looking really, really good, and we liked it. We're all about the Anzacs here, so
yeah, we are.
We'll claim him. We'll claim him like all Australians do. We just claim the Kiwis.
Any Kiwi that's got a bit of talent, yeah, he's Aussie.
Yeah, Scott McLaughlin. Everyone thinks he's Aussie. He's racing. It's funny.
Jack Miller's half Kiwi.
Yeah, I can see that.
In his number. You look at his number, he's got a Kiwi little leaf thing.
Did not know that.
Yeah,
they love Queensland, the Kiwis. They always go to Queensland first for some reason.
Yeah, you go up to Queensland and there's a lot playing on that Maori keyboard.
That's very true.
Aussies will get that.
But yeah, I mean, just a great race again, as expected.
Amazing race. Rueda was like, should have, like, was on pace to win it.
Yeah.
And then just dumped it to eighth.
Is he... Rueda is the outstanding talent for this year.
Yeah,
by the looks of things. So
he's won like five races.
Yeah, he's really, really going well. And probably his worst result in probably the last 5 weekends, I think. So he's looking strong. Awesome for David Munoz, obviously. He's got that reputation to be a little bit of a...
Didn't take anyone out.
So Quiles, the same first year, still amazing.
Fourth race.
Still amazing.
And probably should have won it. So, and he was pissed off with himself in that interview. He wasn't... Yes. Like, you could tell he was disappointed.
And then Jacob as well, Roulston, he was going really well and unfortunately, technical issue.
Yeah,
I think,
mechanical.
In the end, so.
And he was up in that front pack, elbows out.
It was.
So that's disappointing for him. That sucks because he was right there. But, you know... Kelso just getting some points for our Aussie boys, but like going to Quiles, like that dude's gonna be a star, bro. He's four races in, man.
There's another one coming through that's gonna be that, you know, generational talent
under that Marquez tutelage, which he is. He trains with all those boys, have taken him under his wing, and he's quick. So,
I'll give you the
watch out for him.
The opposite,
go on.
The opposite in Moto3: Spain, Italian, Spain, Australian, Spain. Japanese.
Yeah, a few Japanese we know about that in the Moto3.
But they dominate. And it's interesting talking to the guys last week, the bros, and we're talking about, it must be so hard for Australians to get in, but it must be so hard for the Spanish because there's so many of them.
You got
to
be outstanding.
You have to be outstanding where you can be outstanding in Australia, but you have nowhere near the same amount of competition. Yes, it's hard to get over there, but you're different because you're Australian, where like there is 10 little kids in that Moto3 that are all talented. But it's just that little bit of tenth there,
Is that why David Alonso is a Colombian?
Correct. Yeah. Maybe you're right.
Dude's born in Barcelona.
He was, yeah. He's Spanish.
And he got some honorary Spanish thing. He's Spanish.
Yeah.
Just don't have that flag when he's on the podium.
That's it. Yeah, he must be getting the cartel money, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they would be doing something like that.
You got anything else on Moto3 or you...
Nah, that's all I got.
Cool, mate. Well, let's jump on to... I want to have a quick chat about 24-hour Le Mans on this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, that's this weekend?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, fuck, that's crept up.
Yes. So, they've had the parade through the local French village, which is super exciting.
That's so cool.
The cars look insane.
Would you say they're the best-looking race cars?
Yeah, they are
these days.
Yeah.
I think they are. Yeah, that Ferrari is art.
It's so nice. And then the Porsche this year looks incredible. Like, so nice. So, it's really exciting. It's an exciting time of the year. It's one of my favorite events. It's one of our favorite events, yeah. I should say.
You are our local resident 24-hour correspondent.
Yeah, I am.
I'm gonna call you at 3 a.m. going, Tommy, what's going on? Mate, the Porsche? The Porsche is on there. They've put four mediums and a soft on. They fucked it.
But yeah, I'd be super excited. I think it's such an open field this year. We've got, you know, we went through the other wet day. We've got Porsche, we've got Cadillac, we've got Ferrari.
Yep.
We've got the Valkyrie debuting there, which is the Aston Martin.
NASCAR? Is there a NASCAR
No NASCAR. No NASCAR.
For our Americans.
But yeah, great commentary team. I love the commentators. Yep. There's that particular British gentleman who I forget his name, but I really enjoy listening to him. So funny. They read out all the tweets and stuff throughout the night. So yeah, race start should be on about 10 p.m. on Saturday night. For all the viewers at home, I think we're all looking at it's on Stan Sport.
Oh yeah, because I rebuy Stan every year just for this fucking thing.
And I think you can also buy the package on their website to watch it as well. But it might not be available in Australia because Stan might have the rights. But,
gotcha.
But have a look through that. But it's worth. I mean, it's all about the Sunday as we wake up on Sunday morning, they go into darkness.
Yes,
and then pretty much all the first 8 hours on Sunday is all dark. And last year was super disappointing because that's sort of... It's hard to watch it, but everything happens, you know?
Weren't they under like a four-hour safety car last year?
Yeah. Yeah, 4 hours. And it was all through overnight. It was all safety cars. Because it was wet. It was raining as well, so...
That's the good thing about that track, Circuit de la Sarthe, is it's very Bathurst-esque. Those tracks, Bathurst, Spa, Le Mans, where it rains on one side of the circuit and it's dry on the other side of the circuit. Phillip Island, similar. And then for a 24-hour race, it's amazing.
It's such a long track. I mean, it's one of the longest tracks in the world, a lot of like real street circuit vibes, and then obviously you got the Indianapolis section and the first section, which is more of the Le Mans Bugatti circuit.
Yeah, I like that.
We're super excited. It's an event that we love every year, and it's just, as we talk about this, WEC is just in the best shape it's ever been in. So jump on, guys. We give it a watch on Sunday. We've got nothing happening. So
Le Mans 24 hours. You know what's an amazing thing that I think a lot of people forget about that is it's a 24 hour race, and when you're doing your stint, you constantly have to be on, because if you're in those hypercars, you're constantly overtaking Corvettes and like those Ferraris, or if you're one of those Corvettes or whatever, you're moving out of the way, whatever it is. Like, so it's not like you're racing against people your speed. There's like three different classes or four different classes, whatever it is. Yeah. Like, you're constantly moving out of the way. So it makes it so difficult. And that just must take a mental toll out of you, especially if you're doing like a double stint. And just to not make a mistake when you're just trying to move past people.
And then the other aspect of that is the sleep deprivation.
I couldn't do that.
It's just, it's amazing. And we've been speaking to people over the years about that. We spoke to Damien Cudlin about you actually can't get into a deep sleep, because then it actually is more detrimental. Yeah. So they have to, you're only allowed to sleep for like 5 minutes and they
micro sleeps.
Yeah. So you have to sleep for 5 minutes, then they wake you up, then another 5 minutes and they wake you up. Like, oh God, they just don't. They don't tell you this, like when you're watching the race.
Or you see the mechanics are like cooked at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then like imagine if old mate has an issue and then you got to fix it at 3 a.m. Like,
adrenaline is an amazing thing, but it only can get you so far.
Correct.
And I know when I'm... Like I was up last night at like 20 to 2 watching Moto3. And for me, like I'm thinking, am I about to jump in a race car? The race car's going to the wall and I'll fall asleep. I mean, it'd be a different kettle of fish when you got that adrenaline pumping through you. But what that event is, it's just a battle of machine, mind, you know, human perseverance.
People have done it. One person.
I know.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. They must have had me on something back
then.
You
can't do that naturally.
Nah, you can't.
He's not just eating
Milo. It's like when the boys from work, I got home at 4:50 a.m. on Sunday morning. Like, bro, you went on the beers.
Yeah.
You went on the beers. You're on something else.
Yeah, of course. Don't lie to me.
It doesn't make sense. I can't physically stay up to that time. Like, I can't.
Oh, and I was just having a good time. Yeah, you were having a good time,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Don't bullshit a bullshitter. don't piss on me leg and tell me it's raining.
And then obviously, F1 this weekend, Canada, 4 a.m. race start. On Monday morning, I'll probably get up at 6 and watch it, because it's a little bit too tough staying up till 11 p.m. to watch the Le Mans finish and then to get up at 4. So,
oh, of course, yeah.
So that's...
Cocktease.
So it looks like that your boy Lance Stroll will be fit enough to race. We'll wait and see. It's going to be a real hard one, because you've got a replacement racing in Le Mans. So are they going to force a replacement of the Drugovich to leave Le Mans and then forfeit his ride there, come to Canada, and then for Lance Stroll to race anyway?
Can they just not have two, like put it over two different weekends for F1 race? And like, surely they could have figured that out.
Well, look, I'm really surprised they haven't, because they should realistically incorporate, like all the F1 drivers will come and visit. It'd be a cool, really cool event for it to happen. So, and the other thing is there could be a way that an F1 driver could actually compete in it.
Bro, why wouldn't you just do it in like a mid-season break?
Yeah.
How cool would that be? And then you had like a couple of F1, like when they do Suzuka 8 hours.
Yeah.
Like MotoGP riders do that. Mm. That's in the mid-season break.
Yeah, I think it's just F1 is just so, it's just too big now.
I get it. But like it would just be a spectacle.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It's it should be. It could be. And the other thing is like you got a factory Ferrari team in there. Like, oh, what about Charles? You come and race 24 hour Le Mans. That's
exactly what the bikes do.
Yeah. It'd be so cool.
Imagine Max doing it. How cool that
would be. Oh, it'd be awesome. And he's not racing now, Aston Martin, but he might be next year, so we'll see.
Yeah, true.
So it's exciting weekend. Looking forward to it.
Mate, Isle of Man's been on. Just what a crazy, crazy...
The footage out of that has been crazy.
Insane. So there's just so much motorsport on. It's been...
Have we worked out how to watch it yet?
Nah. I've been watching on YouTube, but it's been good to watch. It's been amazing to watch. The guys there are just incredible, which... Tommy's made me, I created a bit of a list. We like lists. Men like lists.
We do. We love lists.
And I've been teasing you with this for a little bit.
You have?
But it's actually, I've been thinking about it. The most dangerous motorsports in the world.
Mm.
What are they? Because they talk about Isle of Man TT, but what else is it?
Yeah, well, I'm going to say Isle of Man TT has to be the most dangerous.
Yeah, so I think it is. I got a 1 to 4.
Go for it.
Now we all know what number one is, but that fourth, I think it's motocross. I think motocross, right, those massive jumps, fatigued, the amount of injuries people get. Like you saw even in the Australian motocross this year, someone passed away. Super dangerous sport that I just think with fatigue and how physical it is it's so easy to make a mistake where you can die. Like it's true. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is I remember we used to go enduro riding and I had the whole kit. I had knee pads.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you had all your padding. You got Albert, you got the full armor gear. Yeah. And then you watch these guys. They got a pair of boots, a gloves, and a jersey.
Yeah.
And they're jumping over people. And it's, it is incredible. Jumps. And some big incidents. I mean, we saw that one last year where you just get that, you get the jump wrong. And then you hit, you know, you're on a hard concrete or hard, you know, dirt patch and knock yourself out and cook yourself. I mean, it's incredible sport. Yeah.
Very, very dangerous.
And not a lot of people would probably think that.
No. And not a lot of people think it's very physical either. Yeah. So physical.
Some of the fittest riders in the world do that sport.
Definitely. So I think motocross is number four. Number three, Pikes Peak Hill Climb. Do you know much about that?
Well, I do. It's a one-off event that they do a hill climb in prototype. A lot of top prototype cars or cars that are built by, you know, certain people and stuff.
And bikes. So,
and then a lot of people also launch cars there. There's a few manufacturers that launch new models and things for the Pike Peak. So
I was looking about a bit of the history over that. The amount of deaths that have been
I couldn't tell you that.
There's been like six in the past 10 years.
No way.
I would say.
Go.
5 to 6. Yep. Like just... I didn't realize how dangerous it was, but when I was looking at doing a little bit of research, that is definitely one where it's, super, super sketchy, and there's no real barriers in a lot of those places as well. Like obviously back in the day, it was really sketchy.
So bikes right go up there as well as cars. I didn't know that either. Amazing.
Ducati got a Pikes Peak Multistrada. I think my old man's got one. They'll do a Multistrada up there.
Scary.
Wild. Number two, Dakar Rally.
Yes.
It's normally a death, I think, almost every year. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. On bikes as well.
Obviously. On bikes, yeah. I think bikes would be definitely the sketchiest one. You don't have a roll cage.
Yeah.
So,
Out in the elements.
It goes for like 2-3 weeks. You're in like the heat. You're tired. It's all day. And then you're sending it. Those dudes are like on the pipe the whole time. Mm. So, definitely one of the most dangerous sports out there. And then obviously number one is the Ironman TT, where you talk about a sport with no room for error, doing 300 Ks an hour and there's light posts whizzing past you. Like there's literally no room for error in that sport.
Yeah, it's some of the scariest onboard footage you can see.
Yeah,
like,
and it's amazing.
And there's a lot of time that we would be like, oh, I'd love to do that. Nah, I'm not doing it.
No.
I don't want to be even on a bike that has any sort of capability. Yeah. I would love to be in a car around there, but do not even think about... I wouldn't even think about getting on a bike and riding around there.
Not at that. Not sending it like they are. And like, you know, you got to know the bumps, the different leaps that there is as well. You know, parts of the track that is damp, where the other ones aren't. Like, you just got to know everything. You don't have to just... know the track, you need to know the environment.
The garlic,
famously, John McGuinness. So there's so much to it. And then every year there always, unfortunately, seems to be a death there as well. Like, but that's the rule of Ironman. Like that's what you're signing up for. Curdy, you don't have a mic though, so we won't be able to hear you.
Just honorable mention.
Yeah.
Macau Grand Prix.
Yeah, I was going to put that in with the Ironman. Same thing, Macau Grand Prix, good one. Yeah. Go on, 17 people died there.
Nine motorcycles.
5 car drivers.
5 cars.
One spectator.
Bystander each.
And a fisherman?
Official.
Oh, official. An official and a bystander. Yeah, well, that's another big one, isn't it? Macau. I guess I could say, Isle of Man street circuit racing, like the Northwest 200 and all that.
Yeah. I just don't know how they do it. I really don't. And it's scary. It's just so scary.
So it's super scary, but
300, like, I think 327 Ks an hour or something they topped off this year. And they're like these street bikes that they're on or, you know, they're just going to get faster and faster and faster. There has to be some sort of limit.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. And I think the super stock bikes actually end up doing the fastest lap
Yeah.
And that's a stock bike compared to even the superbike. Yeah. So it's interesting. But like just those, you just kind of don't think of those dangerous motorsports. And then, you know, there's ones like, yeah, the Macau or Dakar or just motocross, freestyle motocross.
It's a great list, climb. James.
Yeah, it's great list. Yeah, something
yeah.
different.
Yeah.
Hot takes?
Yes, hot takes.
Let's get into it, you dog. Thank you for everyone sending them in. There was obviously a billion that came through again. At yes, this is cool. Banyaya will dominate in Mugello.
Okay. Well, we did touch on that. That's, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think, I mean, you got to beat that great Marc Marquez. I think Alex is just performing unbelievably as well.
He ain't going to dominate. If he's going to win, it's going to be a tight win.
I think Bez might show something as well.
Hopefully.
That's going to be the other aspect. And I mean, who? I just don't know. I really don't know. I can't. It's going to be the hardest top five to pick all year, I think.
How good is it when you don't know?
It's the best.
It is the best. Superbike, Avali kind of agreed with us. KTM had their favorite conditions, hot weather, hard front tire, but still a dog of a bike.
Yeah, I think, again, it's like the Osley bomb they talked about in Silverstone. If your bike works in Silverstone, it's actually a shit bike.
Yeah, it's like when Rins won on the Suzuki at Phillip Islands.
Yeah, yeah, it's so different to every other track where, you know, Aragon probably has a little bit of that aspect as well.
Yeah. Our boy Drayson Silva 87S.
The jewel of the South, North Carolina.
Found his TikTok page, bit of a bike influencer in America.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right.
No helmet covers, please, yeah, Jason.
No MS. Don't look. Don't even think about looking up MSR. Okay. Don't look at it.
No helmet covers.
No helmet covers.
Marc Marquez was raised by aliens. Of course, he's going to kill these immortals.
Wow, it's a strong statement.
Or mortals, I should say.
It's funny with his mum. Is it Rosa? I think they kept. Like, who's she going to support? So she's, yeah. They were trying to put like the Ducati t-shirt on her, and then she was sitting in Alex's box. I mean,
that's called a
so
double.
She's coming up more and yeah. more because she's never was never came to the races or anything like
it was
that.
Always it was always the old man,
Julio. Yeah, so
hitting them.
yeah.
I need like a softer touch. I need a mother's touch now.
Yeah, that's it.
Not getting beat. Yeah. Stav 93. What happened to shoulder cam? I loved it, but it's not being used this year.
Yeah, right. It was really cool. I think that there were some concerns from the riders about safety.
They kept breaking collarbones. Everyone kept doing their collarbone, and they realized they all had the shoulder cam.
Yeah, so no one wanted it anymore. So
they got to fix that up. That's for sure. At It's Cold Papa, number one, reigning number one ticket holder. This could be you for next year.
Can't win it two years in a row,
nah,
unfortunately.
No. Nah. Maximo seems more of a competition to Rueda than anyone as of right now. So, Quiles.
I'd say, I mean, he's there, always there or thereabouts.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. Qualifies well, and he's only four races in and hasn't showed of any, like, he's only showing improvement.
The only other person you always see up there is Kelso. I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah. You always see him up there. And he's going to finish probably, hopefully, top five in the championship, I'm going to say.
I think he's third at the moment.
Yeah, and then hopefully on a bigger bike for next year, so.
Yep. Yeah, no, I'm with you. HG.Ava. Pecco found something, but he won't be able to compete with Mark anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way Pecco's going to dominate Mugello, going back to the previous take. There's no way he's going to dominate. No one's going to dominate Marc Marquez anywhere this year unless Marquez crashes. So for me, I think Marquez, I'm still going to pick him for the win. But yeah, it's like a Lorenzo changing his seat and then winning in...
And that was in Mugello.
Is he going to change the front brake and that's going to be the difference?
It can't be a disc. A disc can't just change. And he said that. The disc can't change everything. No. They've got to find more.
Well, I think it helped, and I touched on this earlier in the pod, it helped that he got out. He was third, clear air, wasn't in traffic, got a rhythm together. Yes, he got passed by Acosta a couple of times, but repassed him very quickly. That was the difference. Yeah. If Acosta got past him and he spent laps behind Acosta, I think it might have been a different situation. So,
yep. Yeah, no, 100%. I definitely agree. Thank you for that one. At 289 Racing, not a Marquez hater at all, but at what point does a dominance hurt MotoGP?
Well, it's going to go back to like 2013. Oh my God, there's new kids on the block. He wins the championship. 2014. Oh, he's won the championship again. He's looking really good. 2015. Oh. Fuck, he's dominating again.
Well, he didn't win it that year.
Oh, sorry, you're right. And then obviously Lorenzo won it that year, didn't he? So,
but then he went 16, 17, 18,
19. And then dominated. So, yeah. The thing is, back then, you got to remember that Rossi
still such a prolific figure in the sport, and it did change a lot of people's opinion when Marquez and Rossi had that stoush in Malaysia 2015. But I don't know. I think the sport's changed. Fucking the world's changed as well, hasn't it? So, and I think a lot of more people are going, oh my God, how amazing is domination?
And I think it's just a part of it. Like, you just never
I'm the barometer, James. Telling you, when I go, oh, Marquez wins again, that's when you know it's changed.
Yeah, you are the barometer for that, definitely. Mm. Definitely.
Sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. I like what you just said there. It's true. I don't think there's just... It's you're never just always going to have like a championship battle every year. There's always someone dominating, whether it's Bags for a year or a couple of years, or Rossi or Marquez or Lorenzo. Like, there's always just going to be someone dominating, but you're going to have to just sit back and try your best if you don't like him. This guy obviously still likes him, but to enjoy it, because this year and next year, I think it's going to be all him.
It's all going to be him, and we're still going to probably have three different world champions in the last three years, which is exciting. Mm. We're going to go into 26, probably much the same. But then there's new regs in 27. It's going to change a lot of things.
Look, and if Marquez just say, or anyone wins and wins titles in a row, as long as the racing's good.
Yeah.
Like, Marquez won all those titles, but the racing was always still good because he still had fights of Dovi or Lorenzo or Rossi. So, like, okay, the outcome might be the same, but how you get to that outcome is still exciting.
The worst season probably was 2015, because Lorenzo just got out in front in a lot of races and was just put in the lap after lap after lap after lap.
So. Yeah. Yeah, Marquez won the first 10 in 14.
Yeah.
But then 15's when it all turned to shit anyway, with Rossi and Marquez. Nicky D, 3604, your boy. Will Marquez race until his 40s and retire on top, Will Marquez race until his 40 or retire on top like Nico Rosberg?
Yeah, I mean, That's interesting. Great take. I don't think he'll do the same thing as what Rossi did, because Rossi was probably 3 or 4 years too long.
I think Marquez just wants to beat his titles. Without saying it, I think that's exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah.
I think he gets a 10, he'll be content.
Yeah.
And I think he's like well on track to do it. If you're RB Rossi, I'll be nervous. I'll be so nervous. Because he's going to equal it this year.
Yeah, it's such a complicated situation, because you got Rossi like... In Bag's back pocket as well. Bag's not performing now. It's crazy.
At my Joe_Joe, would you pick Manu Gonzalez or Diego Moreira from MotoGP?
Oh, that's think Manu question. Gonzalez. I think Moreira has shown some real talent, but you know he's still not a race winner. So
yes, definitely pick Manu. But Diego Moreira, I got to give him credit. I think it's only his second year in Moto2, maybe third. Let's just say second. He's been quick from the get-go from Moto3. He's been like one of those only people to come out of Moto3 that's been fast.
I know, because you look at like the Sergio Garcias of the world. Oh, like,
he had a bit. Garcia had a season or two. Yeah. It was not bad.
Yeah.
But like Guevara.
Yeah. These guys dominated Moto3.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah, I know.
Some of those Japanese guys.
I'm telling you, Moreira's second last lap was one of the most impressive laps I've ever seen.
I know.
He first of all broke the lap record on the second last lap. He was 1.3 seconds behind Onshu, then passes him, and then he gets beaten on the last corner. But him throwing around that bike, especially that left hander, that after the Marquez corner, just threw the bike in, threw it to the back. Like, he was all over it. Like, that's talent.
He's going to be a star.
Yeah.
And good to see, as you said, South Americans, Brazilians up there.
As long as they're not Argentinian, it's all good. They're the worst fans. Worst fans, Argentinians.
That ain't a hot take, that's for sure. I think everyone agrees with that. Sorry for our Argentinian listeners, but...
all six of them.
Be better. Yeah, be better. Be better fans. At Ned Kane, the MotoGP commentators are so much better than the F1 commentators.
Okay.
There's a hot take for you, T-Shav. What do you think of that?
No, I disagree. I think Brundle and Crofty do an amazing job. I think I still miss Nick Harris to a certain extent with MotoGP. He was just classic, wasn't he? But Matt Burt does a really, really good job. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't change him, but I'd love to hear more of the TNT coverage with Neil and
Gavin
and Gav. That'd be awesome. I wish you'd have the choice, but we don't here in Australia. I remember that one race in Silverstone last year, then we didn't have a choice and everyone cried about it. But yeah, after meeting Neil and Gav, I mean, two ripping blokes and work so well together as well. So.
Really, really, really genuinely great guys.
Yeah.
the thing that I like about the TNT coverage is I like how they have all that like post race
analysis
and yeah. after like and before as well. Sorry.
Yes.
And I wish we had that there where we get the live feed and you just go straight into the racing. But like, I would love to hear like more of those thoughts from Neil Hodgson and Gavin Emmett.
If anyone, like, yeah, exactly. I agree. Yeah.
If anyone knows how to, I don't. How do you even get there?
You probably have to get a VPN. Curdy will know how to do it, and then subscribe to something. But for me as well, it's I think to a certain extent, we actually used to make fun of the Fox Sports pre-race show before. You know, obviously before you meet people and discover how hard it would be. Mm. Like we used to always go, oh, here we go. What's going on here? But yeah, I miss that as an aspect as well. I miss sitting down on a Sunday night and then you got Damo Cuddler.
On the wines. He was on the wines. You could see him get brighter, more and more red.
Brighter, yeah. Especially the coverage in bloody 2020 COVID years when he was on the laptop. And he said this to us. He was on the piss. And he had to settle it down. But yeah, for me... it's amazing. We were sitting in his bar at his house and he had the TV up. He goes, this is where I watched the MotoGP in COVID and I had my laptop sitting here and I was on Fox Sports presenting it. I mean, how crazy is that? That'd be super hard. I couldn't do that. So
it'd be really hard.
It'd be super hard. But for me, like I missed that aspect of the Aussie and then they cross live to the track and that sort of thing. I really like that. And that's what TNT has.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Matt Burt does a pre-race show at all.
He just jumps
in the commentary. And we've seen that. We've seen him in the media center. He just jumps straight in the commentary box, comes back, and then that's it.
That's not bad. It's not a bad gig, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's far out. It'd be hard. I mean, it's a tough gig as well. You've got to be always on.
Imagine commentating and then doing all the pre and post race stuff as well.
That'd be tough. Yeah.
But as Gavin Emmett said, doesn't matter. If they were paying me enough, I'll go down to Channel 10 in Australia or Foxtel and I'll do it for Australia. Like, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
That would be hard though. Like, imagine us doing that. That'd be the problem is we'll just go on tangents. You'd talk quick points.
Yes.
Where like we'll just start talking about fucking Suzuka 8 hour.
And the other thing is Matt Burt called it was that we touched on it. He called it was a Acosta went down instead of Vinyas, and you can tell that would have wrecked his whole day.
Yeah.
He would have been like he would have come back to the media center and gone fuck. I fucked it. You know?
I knew he fucked it because I knew it was Vinyas because he had an Arai helmet on.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not fucking...
Yeah, he saw the Red Bull sponsorship on the helmet and got all excited. So.
Yeah. Our boy Matt Ould, this one's definitely tailored towards me, but you'll find this funny. Thoughts on World Supercross. Crazy how many times have rebranded slash cancelled events. So the World Supercross was supposed to be this premium World Supercross Championship.
World Supercross.
Yeah, so they go to different countries. England, Australia, America, France, whatever. It's dwindled down to like one or two rounds for the year. They've had like three different buyouts. They've sold all these like tickets. Then they've just cancelled like these massive paychecks. And nothing's happened from it. Like it's a complete failure.
God.
They had like one, I think, in Perth, maybe not that long ago. And they had some of the big riders in there.
Mm.
And for some reason, just out of mismanagement.
It's just not marketed right, is it?
I don't know what's going on.
It's getting worse. And you looked at even like that Aussie... The Supercross this year in November at Docklands.
Oh, yeah, the big one-off one.
Wasn't a sellout.
I thought they marketed that all right, though.
They marketed, but it wasn't a sellout. We went probably 3 years before that. It was fully sold out over two nights.
They had Ricky Carmichael there.
But, like, they had Jet Lawrence there.
Yeah, true. But that's even bigger.
I know. It? Like, it doesn't... Like, it's just... It's a very strange thing in Australia because we all ride dirt bikes growing up. We all love it. We all do enduro riding. Everyone loves it. But... It's just a very small fan base.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It's probably a fan base that's not... Like, Melbourne can host it because it's so big. Yeah. You got Etihad.
Yeah.
But it's probably bigger...
Etihad.
Oh, what are they called?
It's amazing. We all call it something different.
I was at the footy on Saturday and I did the same thing. Yeah. I called it Etihad. Marvel.
Colonial Stadium.
Where you can house like 45,000 people.
Yeah.
But realistically, they probably should have it in like Brisbane. I think it's a bigger market.
More rednecks. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's definitely... Yeah.
The Queen of the North.
That's what they call it, Jason. Brisbane, Queen of the North. Jack_07. Pedro and Martin to HRC in 2026. Two Spanish riders with Repsol back on board. # bring back Orange.
Mm.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But then again, I think Mia, like... For me, there needs to be someone who knows the bike to develop it. So
I got Zarco.
Yeah, it's true.
Mears, I think they need Mears though. That's a hard situation. It's too much talent.
Yeah.
Too much talent, not enough good bikes. At Sepsis, two for Chris Seps. Do you think they should show each other's... This is the autistic one. This is I appreciate this. Do you think they should show each rider's country flag on the times? I do. Because I agree. I think they should.
They should. Hyperfixation. They show they show the numbers.
Yeah.
But not... Yeah, they show the numbers. Or but not the...
They used to show the numbers in their font.
Yes.
And I really like that. They should go back to that.
Yeah.
But now they just got their regular analog numbers and I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean...
And they should have the flags. I'm with Sepsi
here.
Yeah,
no, I agree.
You got to remember, we're all autistic.
Yeah, but different... Different... Different spectrums.
There's different levels to the spectrum.
Gertie? Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I think they should, you see.
Go on. At Chris Sepsi again. At this stage, Pecco needs to either go to his 24 bike... Or look for another team next season. They're already off the Italians. They're already off the Italians. Sepsi, come on.
We're sitting there, Philip Island this year. Bagnaia, the most talented rider.
Best I've ever seen. Better than Rossi. Better than Rossi. Word for word, he said.
True. Okay.
Oh, something about just giving the Italian shit sometimes is so funny.
I want to give us enough.
This one's definitely directed at you, and I like this. Our boy, OG fan as well, Braden _ Hardcastle. Danny Rick to save Oz Supercars. Yeah, I've heard some murmurs. I don't know if you're all over it. You're a bit of my four-wheel correspondent. You know that?
For me, I haven't heard any rumors for that. Okay. I've heard Cadillac rumors for Ricardo. Cadillac
F1.
Coming into F1 next year. They've got to find two drivers. Will it be Perez and Ricardo? That's the rumor. But for me, it's... who knows? No, I don't know. I mean, Casey Stoner tried that. I think you got to grow up with those sort of cars from a young age. There's been no one who's come into that sport and really done anything.
Danny Rick's buddy, four-wheel driver, though.
Different, bro, I'm telling you, those V8 supercars, and everyone will agree with me, they some of the hardest cars to drive. Mm. You just need, like, your heel and toe changing gears. I mean, it's a different kettle of fish than a Formula One car. It's completely different.
Okay.
It's completely
different. Yeah, it would be. I guess so, yeah.
It is completely different. No, I don't see him coming to V8 supercars and dominating. I don't.
What about just to supercars?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be cool to see, but like, you know, will it really revitalize the support sport? Probably not.
Bro, fair supercars is, I feel like there's like more teeny girls trying to get into it.
Mm. Well, I've seen
that on Instagram, like just through the algorithm.
Again, the Perth 400 was on the weekend. Do you know what happened?
I actually tried to watch some of it and I couldn't.
So, and there's different podcasts for that if you're into that. But for us, it's a sport that I just... When you got MotoGP and F1 on every weekend now... I have limited time already to watch motorsport. I'm not choosing that.
But bro, we used to.
Yeah, we used to. But then again, I mean, I don't remember ever watching Practice 1, Practice 2.
No, you're not going to not do that. But like,
no, but I'm talking about in F1 and GP.
Oh, yeah.
We used to watch the race. That was it.
Yeah, true. That's all you could watch.
That's all you could watch. Yeah. Now, you got everything. And then the thing is, that's the thing. Like, you got sprint races for MotoGP as well. So, it's so easy to... Once these world sports are easier to access... The local stuff you sort of forget about. That's what happens.
That's a good point.
So
that's a great point. And then we just watch Bathurst. And even Bathurst has been a letdown.
Real letdown. Yeah. But I mean, it still has its purpose, I think.
Ah, for sure. 100%.
And the next few years with Toyota coming into it, it's going to revitalize it to a certain extent. But I don't think Daniel Ricciardo is going to do much for the sport, personally.
That's a good take. I don't know. I really don't know if he would. But anyway. At Matt Stevens, watched a bit of the Spa 8 hours. Superbikes going through Eau Rouge tapped is a spectacle to watch.
Were they flat through there?
They were pretty... I don't know, but they looked fucking flat.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's
They can't be flat, surely. It's too... I don't know.
Well, yeah, Danby was saying, oh, it's easy. All you're going to do is just turn it in. I said, oh, have you ridden it, Danby? He goes, nah, I've driven it.
Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
It's tough. It would take scary.
A disgusting amount of commitment. And it was mixed conditions, so it started raining. Oh, I was watching it, and it started raining on one side of the track.
Yeah.
And then a lot of teams, like half the teams went to wets, and then the other half stayed on dry.
That's cool.
Going through a Rouge tapped on a fucking superbike.
And it's raining and slicks.
Yeah, and there's not much runoff. It's pretty scary.
Crazy.
Mate, that's hot takes. Thank you for everyone that put them in.
Special mention Daniel Mason. We did actually touch on this, but All riders on the GP24 will be nowhere in 2026, suffering the same issues on the current 25 bike. So, yeah, that's going to be a big conundrum for them next year if they're going to go on to those 25 bikes where it seemed to be they've gone backwards. So, we'll see. Time will tell.
Time will tell.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks, everyone. Really appreciate it.
What's up? Canada this week?
Yes.
F1?
Yeah, we did talk about that.
Okay, I can't remember. it's ADHD.
Lance Stroll looks like he's going to be back, so...
I like it. Yeah. Everyone, check out our Patreon May review. We've got another one hopefully coming up in another couple of weeks as well.
Yep.
Jump on board.
$2.50 a week at all it's going to cost you.
Just quit smoking and then you got
one cigarette.
It's one cigarette.
Just smoke one cigarette less a week and you can afford our pod. That's it. It's one less cigarette. You can watch our Patreon.
Yeah. And it's got some good stuff in there. It's a laugh. And we do our fraud of the month.
It's crazy, actually.
It's crazy actually, it's a laugh.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.